Pharmacy Podcast Nation. You got to listen in every Tuesday to stay up to date on the most recent medication therapy topics. Game Changers creates awareness about pharmacotherapy and clinical practice changes that can significantly impact pharmacy practice. Every Tuesday, a new episode of Game Changers is published on the Pharmacy Podcast Network. Thanks so much for listening. And always remember, the pharmacist is the hub of healthcare.
To another edition of Game Changers Clinical Conversations. I am your host, Jeff Wall, professor of pharmacy practice at Drake University and all around blabbermouth. So welcome to another week where we hope to give you guys some good information that pharmacists and other healthcare professionals can use having to do with pharmacotherapy, and especially for the boots on the ground people who are dealing and working with patients every single day. Also, our pledge to you is to try not to make this the COVID show, which is difficult to do, as you might imagine. But I think we've actually done a pretty good job the last few weeks. We've only done one COVID show in the last 2 or 3 weeks, so I feel that that's pretty good. I think people want to know that there is actually other medicine and other research going on in the world of medicine beyond just COVID, and guidelines and stuff being released that really do affect many, especially primary care practitioners and people who see patients, you know, in the trenches every day. And that's actually the focus of what we're going to be talking about today, which is the new guidelines from the American College of Physicians for treating musculoskeletal injuries and the role of topical therapies in that. And we'll talk about all that as we kind of go along here. First, as always, please, if you like what we're doing here, please head over to wherever you're getting your podcasts and like us. And please spread the word to everyone you know who's in medicine or is interested in medicine that this is hopefully a pretty quick and pretty easy and pretty painless way to learn about new stuff coming out. Those of you who are pharmacists who are interested in CE, again, as always, we thank CE Impact for sponsoring the show, but please do go over to CE Impact, where you can sign up for several of their very affordable and excellent CE packages, of which one of them is this. And if you do, in fact, do that, not only do you get to learn hopefully something during this talk, but you also get CE for it. So you actually get some reward for listening to me blather for 20 minutes, and it's a super, super simple process to do so. So again, please head over to CE Impact and do so as we go along. So anyway, today we are going to talk about topical nonsteroidals and really in the context of the new guidelines that were just released August 19th by the American College of Physicians, the American Academy of Family Physicians, on the treatment of topical musculoskeletal injuries. And so we're talking again kind of those, you know, usually fairly minor, you know, though they can be, you know, fairly painful, but usually minor acute musculoskeletal injuries that we all deal with, sprained an ankle, you know, bumped an elbow, you know, things along those lines. This also kind of strays a bit, even though the guidelines don't talk about it, I think the guidelines, this does stray a bit into the treatment of some more chronic pain conditions such as osteoarthritis of the knee and things along those lines. But the guidelines here are primarily focused on those, you know, non-low back pain, musculoskeletal injuries that I suspect, especially the community pharmacists listening, do have people wander in and say, hey, you know, is ibuprofen okay for me to take? Or, you know, what about Tylenol, or, you know, things along those lines. So patients, you know, usually don't see a physician for it, or they either self-treat or often do see their pharmacist about that. So I hope this is something that if you are a community pharmacist in particular, get a chance to take a look at these guidelines. So without belaboring the entire guidelines, which are available online for free right now at the Annals of Internal Medicine website, they basically, as you might imagine, basically point out in a substantial amount of the guideline how opioid therapies are really not what you want to be using in most of these patients, and this isn't just because of the risk of addiction and dependence with these medications that, of course, there's no need to belabor, which is I think we're all pretty well aware of now, is that there's now been several studies, randomized control trials in acute injury that have looked at things like, you know, opioids versus nonsteroidals, and basically found that at as far as pain control, in most of the cases, they're about equal to each other as far as pain control. You don't get a lot more pain control for acute musculoskeletal injuries, the minor ones that we're talking about here, from opioids over nonsteroidal. So it isn't even just a question of you know, gee, it's, you know, I'm afraid I'm going to get addicted and all that. That's certainly an issue, but you're not even really getting the benefit of greater pain control in most patients. And so, you know, they say that this has been studied, and opioid therapies are really associated with little to no benefit with these patients, and of course, substantial harms. And in those same studies, while they didn't really take a look at addiction and overdose and things like that, they did take a look at things like CNS depression and drowsiness and things like that. And it was much more common, as you might imagine, in the opioid arms of those studies compared to the nonsteroidal arm. So you know, as is probably not surprising, the ACP guidelines do very much say that opioid therapies are really not your first line, or not even really your second line in these patients, and really there should be a wide range of other types of therapies that we should try before even thinking about opioids. They also call out tramadol, which I'll be honest with you, I'm kind of glad they did. And I suspect many community pharmacists listening might kind of be nodding their heads. You know, I still think there's this kind of mindset out there among a group of clinicians who believe that tramadol, because at one time it was not a controlled substance, you know, is not really an opioid, and it doesn't really cause addiction, and it doesn't really cause dependence. And certainly in my career, I've heard practitioners say that, and whenever I say that, I almost always have pharmacy students with me on my services, and I always turn to them because they're usually working in community pharmacies and say, so if you had to take a guess, do you know any of your patients in your community pharmacy who are addicted or dependent to tramadol? And they nod their heads, because again, you know, it's a mu opioid receptor and agonist, so there would be no reason it wouldn't cause all the same problems that the traditional opioids do. So it was nice to see that tramadol did actually get a call out there saying, you know, we're not talking about Percocet and Vicodin here. We are also talking about tramadol, that these are not first line or second line, maybe even not even third line, that we really should be trying a lot of other things. And what really gets the most recommendation in here is treatment with topical nonsteroidals, with or without menthol gel. And that is listed as the first line therapy for symptom and pain relief and physical function and improving pain and patient satisfaction. So that's actually first line is topical nonsteroidals. Second line is oral nonsteroidals and or other types of things like Tylenol. And then third line, they move on to, you know, actually they even call out acupressure and acupuncture, which is kind of interesting for an allopathic medical journal, and TENS devices and things along those lines. But in their review, the authors, you know, basically state that they found that topical nonsteroidals are the most effective and safest therapy for these acute musculoskeletal injuries. They're associated with reduced pain, reduced symptom function, and improvement in physical function. And so he says acetaminophen is certainly an option as well. They say oral nonsteroidals are reasonable, but it's also important to keep in mind the harms associated with oral nonsteroidals that we will get into in just a second. And then they talk about, again, some of the non-pharmacologic therapies. So they base all this on a systematic review they did on the comparative safety and efficacy of a numerous set of drugs and non-drugs for acute pain for lasting less than a month. So again, this is the kind of the minor sprains and bumps that we all kind of get, I think, in day-to-day life. They actually, in the systematic review, included 207 trials that enrolled about 33,000 patients and evaluated 45 treatments. So quite a lot of things have been looked at. And they were mostly, you know, strains, you know, pains with whiplash, muscle strains, pulled muscles, things along those lines, contusions, things along those lines. And in this study, again, they found that in the systematic review and meta-analysis, they found that in particular, ankle sprains and other types of sprains, acute low back pain and stuff, do seem to have some good efficacy when it comes to or topical nonsteroidals seem to have good efficacy when it comes to treating those things. And they actually found that they had the most effective, most robust data for pain relief at 2 hours, and that they didn't seem to have significant adverse effects. So that's kind of interesting. Some of the other things that were looked at in this meta-analysis included some pretty bizarre things like codeine, sublingual fentanyl, which I'm hoping nobody out there is even contemplating for the treatment of a sprained ankle. Tylenol with sort of the variety of other therapies, cyclobenzaprine, which we've talked about previously as a muscle, a skeletal muscle relaxant, and things along those lines. And they really kind of came to the conclusion that topical nonsteroidals are kind of the way to go. And so that's going to be first and center. Now, how does this kind of impact, you know, the community pharmacist? Because as we all know, recently topical nonsteroidals, which for a while in the United States were prescription only, have recently become over the counter. So I think pharmacists are going to be in a much better place to recommend these medications and have them appropriately used. The saga of topical nonsteroidals is kind of interesting because topical nonsteroidals have actually been available in most other places in the world for over 30 years. Topical ibuprofen, topical diclofenac, topical ketoprofen have all been available in England and in Europe since at least the 1980s. And you may ask, well, gee, why weren't they ever available in the United States? And that's a question I honestly don't know the answer to. You would think that with the millions of people taking nonsteroidals and the drug's known adverse effect profile when taken orally, you know, why wouldn't you use them topically? Now, it's interesting to note that even though these drugs have been around since the 1980s, the literature surrounding their efficacy and safety wasn't very good. Again, probably because they were pretty old drugs, that real robust randomized controlled trials looking at efficacy and safety just really weren't done. And so, you know, even though you could run to a chemist in London, shall we say, and probably get diclofenac or ketoprofen patches or gel, there really wasn't a lot of studies showing that they were efficacious or safe. I think they kind of fell into that kind of nebulous thing for a long time, things like salon pass patches and menthol rubs and things like that, which had all been, you know, over the counter for a long, long time. There just wasn't a lot of data suggesting they were efficacious or safe. So I think they kind of fell into that realm. And so, you know, in the United States, we just never had them. They just weren't an option for most people until about 2015, when finally diclofenac gel, diclofenac patch were both approved by the FDA for prescription use only. Now, you know, it certainly, you know, stands to reason that topical nonsteroidals would work, right? We know that nonsteroidals work by blunting pain responses and causing and decreasing inflammation because they block prostaglandins and other pro-inflammatory and pro-pain signal chemicals in the body. But as we're all well aware, you know, long-term use of nonsteroidals and even sometimes short-term use of nonsteroidals can be associated with side effects. And, you know, the two that in my world as an internal medicine pharmacist that I deal with all the time, of course, are GI bleeds and acute kidney injury. And you know, the data is very clear that especially long-term use of nonsteroidals is associated with an increased risk of GI bleed. And you multiply that risk when you pile other drugs onto the patient that also increase the risk for bleeding. And that includes aspirin. That includes, you know, even SSRIs have been shown in some studies, interestingly, if they're on anticoagulants like warfarin or any of the NOACs, anything along those lines, that's going to dramatically increase the risk of GI bleed. So again, we've known for a long time that nonsteroidals can cause gastric ulcers and they can lead to acute gastrointestinal bleeding. And then of course, acute kidney injury. And again, you know, by themselves, nonsteroidals decrease afferent flow to the kidney. And so because of that, they can cause glomerular damage and lead to acute kidney injury. And again, if you just keep piling medications on to patients who can also do have negative effects on the kidney, like ACE inhibitors, someone's on Bactrim because they have a urinary tract infection, they're taking some loop diuretics, things along those lines. Again, that's all going to lead to that potential for acute kidney injury. But I also want to call out that there are some other adverse effects that I don't think we think too much about with nonsteroidals, even though I think they've gotten quite a bit of press in the last 6 or 7 years. We really haven't touched about them, and I'll be honest, they don't really enter my brain a lot, and that's the cardiovascular risks of nonsteroidals. steroidals. And again, you know, there had been a flurry of studies in the early 2000s that really kind of suggested that you know, all non-steroidals were associated with an increased risk of MI when used chronically. Now, again, this would probably be in older patients who have other risk factors for MI and who have maybe even existing coronary artery disease. And so, several large studies suggested an association, several meta-analyses suggested an association, but then it really kind of bore down to, is that all non-steroidals? Is it only certain ones? You know, as I understand the data, the latest data suggests that, again, probably all non-steroidals do have a small but not insignificant risk for increasing myocardial infarction in patients with known coronary disease or known high risk factors for coronary disease. Does that mean that you've got, someone who, has hyperlipidemia and has a headache, they can never take ibuprofen for it? Of course not. This would be something more along the lines of chronic use, but I think it is a chronic adverse effect that we just really don't think about with the non-steroidals. The other one is fluid retention, and especially in your patients with some degree of chronic kidney disease or heart failure, both preserved and reduced ejection fraction heart failure, non-steroidals can cause fluid retention. And again, that's an adverse effect of the drugs that I think a lot of us just kind of miss, because it's not something that patients often complain about, or at least they don't complain about to their pharmacist, right? I can tell you that over the years of working as an inpatient pharmacist, I've seen several cases where someone was, they hurt themselves or, again, sprained their ankle, did something, and they decided to take, pretty much scheduled, ibuprofen around the clock, and they just happened to have heart failure, and they noticed that they were starting to retain more fluid and getting more short of the breath because they're getting pulmonary edema and things like that. So if certainly, we know that there's a litany of adverse effects that are associated with non-steroidals, more long-term certainly, but even in the short term, they can cause some damage. So certainly topical non-steroidals make sense because, again, we know that most topical formulations deliver high concentrations of prostaglandin and other pain blocking chemicals to the site of injury, right? So, I don't need to have that blockade occurred throughout the body. I really just needed to have it at the site of injury. And so it certainly, from a mechanistic standpoint, certainly stands to reason that it would work. Multiple studies, not great studies, admittedly, did look at topical diclofenac, both gel and patch, to get the drug FDA approved for things like minor sprains and stuff like that, and did find, compared to placebo, big surprise, that they were more effective in doing that. So I think that there's certainly proof of concept and I think certainly clinical data that suggests that delivering non-steroidals right to the site of injury and concentrating that drug and blocking those chemicals right at the site of injury is an effective strategy in many areas of pain management. So now the second question that I think pharmacists get asked a lot, and I know I do, is, well, that's great, but the drugs still say that they've got that you should use them in caution or don't use them in patients with a history of ulcers or with history of kidney problems. Are they safe in these patients? And the $64 answer to that question is we don't have conclusive data, and we probably never will, because it would take a very big study to be done and over a long, long period of time. So at some point we may have a large kind of a database type study or population type study that's done retrospectively to help answer that question. However, most short-term studies, and by short-term I mean up to 6 months of therapy, have not shown, even in patients with risk factors for these things like GI bleeds and acute kidney injury, during these topical non-steroidals have not been associated with an increased risk of developing a new GI bleed or a new acute kidney injury. So the evidence to date, based on the randomized controlled trial data that we have, and the evidence to date, I think, based on retrospective studies, have suggested that these drugs are relatively safe to use in patients who you probably could not use oral non-steroidals in. And again, those are, I had someone who had a GI bleed 5 years ago, and now he's twisted his ankle. Can he use topical non-steroidals? And the answer to the question is probably yes. And as always, use the lowest amount for the lowest period of time as possible, and as soon as the pain goes away, to not continue the therapy on those patients until we get more data. So I actually feel pretty comfortable recommending topical non-steroidals in patients who I would not normally use oral non-steroidals in. And most of the physician groups I work with feel the same way. There are side effects of topical nonsteroidals, but they're almost all completely local, either patch irritation or topical gel irritation. And that's something that in one study was shown to occur in up to 15% of patients. So it is not something you want to take lightly, not something you don't want to warn your patients about. But as far as the systemic side effects, it does not seem to be, so far for the data we have, a very big issue. And again, that again stands to reason when we know that for example, the diclofenac patch, less than 10% of the drug enters the systemic circulation. One study suggested even less than 5% did. So I think again, mechanistically, it certainly stands to reason that we would not see a whole lot of systemic circulation of the nonsteroidal with these topical forms, and so they should be much safer than the oral formulation. So, I think as these become over the counter, I think these are questions that the pharmacists are going to face pretty commonly now. And I think having the latest information is really kind of the way to go when we're talking to patients about this. Again, no drug has no side effects. We all know that, but I think that it is reasonable to use these drugs short term in patients even who would not probably be candidates for oral nonsteroidals. We don't have any information on fluid retention or anything like that, but again, with the low amount of these drugs being absorbed, I don't think that's likely to be a problem with these. Other companies are looking at different types of nonsteroidals for more delivery, so I would not be surprised if you see an increasing number of agents in this space coming out in the next 5 to 10 years. Ketoprofen is actually in phase 3 studies right now, and will it go right to over-the-counter status, or will it be prescription for a couple of years and then go over-the-counter status? So that'll be very interesting to see what happens there. There are other topicals as well. The other topical that I've had some luck with over the years for other types of things is topical lidocaine. And of course, now that 4% topical lidocaine patches are available and are much less expensive than the Lidoderm patches, which most insurance companies wouldn't pay for anyway, I think again that's another powerful tool you can use, especially in people who have point tenderness. I've actually had very good luck personally with lidocaine patches in people with compression fractures with osteoporosis. They're in a lot of pain and you're trying to minimize the amount of opioids they're on. And I've actually had pretty good luck just slapping a patch right on where the pain is. And they can usually point right to where this little bulge in the back is where the pain is. And you can slap a patch right on that. And it seems to work really, really well. I've had pretty good luck with that. It's not going to have them running in a marathon after they put it on, but it can certainly decrease the amount of systemic analgesics that they're using. So, bottom line, I think pharmacists are going to play a big role in this. I think that you're going to see with these guidelines, that it kind of cements the fact that the topical nonsteroidals are here to stay, and I think they have a good role in a variety of different treatments. Topical nonsteroidals have at least some data, even in things like knee osteoarthritis, and I think they are reasonable to suggest in patients who are trying to avoid lots of oral nonsteroidals in and just see if it works. So I think we're going to see more and more topical nonsteroidals as guideline people and studies recommend their use and do start to recognize their relative efficacy and their pretty good safety profile. So that's we'll kind of wrap things up in a second, but first a word from our sponsor, CE Impact.
Game Changers discusses clinical guidelines and pharmacotherapy trends that significantly impact practice. Game Changers is produced and accredited by CE Impact and hosted by Dr. Jeff Wall. New episodes are released each week and available for pharmacy continuing education credit to CE Impact subscribers. CE Impact subscription service brings you the CE you need on the topics that matter the most. Check out the link to sign up in the show notes. Use code PODCAST for a Pharmacy Podcast Network discount.
So a very common set of conditions that pharmacists are going to get asked about, especially in the community, is musculoskeletal injuries. Patients will treat themselves, et cetera, et cetera. When you get asked about it and you see that, I've got topical diclofenac on my shelves now, who gets it and who can get it? And I think that pharmacists can play a very key role in selecting appropriate patients and also referring patients if they have pain that goes on beyond what would be normal for that, say, you know, 2 to 4 weeks if they're still having significant pain. Maybe there's something else going on there and it's time for them to get some imaging done and seeing what's going on there. But I think pharmacists can play a big, big role in appropriate use of topical nonsteroidals and counseling patients and providers on their safety and their efficacy. So that's it for this week. Hope you enjoyed it. Again, please like us if you at wherever you listen to your podcast and spread the word. Let's get more people listening to Game Changers Clinical Conversations. I will see you next week. And remember, time flies. I don't know where it's going, but the most important day you have is today. Take care.